The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. We're starting off with a Welcome to Oprah Insider. Oprah on another trip around the sun. Hello there, insiders. Well, here we are, another trip around the sun, and this one brings me to the dawn of a new decade, as I turn 70. I know how blessed I am to be here. Honestly, getting older when you have the means to take care of yourself is a gift to be treasured. No day is promised to any of us, so to reach this major milestone feels like grace in action. Back when I turned 50, I wrote that on every birthday, you decide whether to mark it as the end of your greatest days or the beginning of your finest hour. This still rings true for me. I try to start each day rejoicing that I'm still here, ready to start anew. My word for this year is praise. Praise for God. Praise for life. Praise for every moment. I begin with praise and end with gratitude. That's my formula for a life that reciprocates in abundance and beauty. I had such pressure from all my friends to do something big, something special, to have a dinner, a party or luncheon, or to go somewhere like a spa, a hike, a resort, or to meditate in Nepal. I thought about it all, took in all their suggestions, and finally did what one friend, Wintley, recommended. He said, "You're too blessed to stress. Savor the fragrances of your extraordinary life." It reminded me of the last line of Love After Love, one of my favorite poems by Derek Walcott. Sit, feast on your life. So that's what I've been doing. Going through old journals, photos, memory boxes, feasting, savoring, and marveling at the discovery, pain, joy, and wonder of 70 years of growing into the woman I am. I ran across a 2-page handwritten letter from Gail, dated April 17, 1992. In it, she says, "I'm so sorry you have to go through this." Based on her condolences, I think it had something to do with once again being publicly shamed about my weight. However, the "this" was not clearly stated, and I can't recall what was causing me such anguish. What I've learned is that everything passes, and if you don't write down the specific pain or heartache, you won't even remember it. Those of you in my age range know this to be true. What I celebrate this birthday and beyond is knowing that the person I know myself to be and the work that has come straight from being has mattered. At my age, you recognize the poignancy of time passing. 70 resonates, letting you know for sure that there are not as many years remaining as you've already consumed. I take great satisfaction in accepting that, regardless of how many more suns are left, the rising each time has been worth it. This next article is in Wellness. 5 signs your emotional intelligence is improving with age. Resilience, compassion, and self-knowledge are just a few of the bright spots that come with midlife. What if the secret to being happier was purely just to get older? Sounds absurd, right? But think about it. The early stage of midlife can often feel less like a midlife crisis and more like a midlife circus. The spinning plates, the whining kids and dying parents, the career woes, no time for friends, fun, or frolicking, especially in the bedroom. We may begin to feel like we need a container store for our emotions. At the same time, however, we finally have the tools to handle what life throws at us. By 50, our EQ, emotional IQ, is higher than it's ever been. We've seen enough good and bad times to understand that what coping skills work for us. We've started practicing psychohygiene, rituals, ways of life that cleanse our minds and hearts, we realize that we are more resilient than we ever thought. Ideally, we've learned to dance with our emotions instead of shoving them in a drawer. U.S. Berkeley psychologist Robert Levinson is one of many academics who has demonstrated that while IQ stays relatively stable during one's adulthood, EQ rises with time. Levinson's team studied a group of research subjects who ranged in age from their 20s to their 60s. He asked them to watch a series of video clips designed to elicit different emotions, such as disgust and sadness, then tried to modulate their emotions in response to the nasty or heart-rending clips, either to remain unmoved or to try to see the upside of whatever they witnessed on screen. Which age group was best able to tap into their emotional responses? The researchers found that the older the participant, the better they were at both reinterpreting the scenes in positive ways, a technique called positive reappraisal, and at actively processing the emotions the video clips elicited, a hallmark sign of emotional intelligence. That's because, as he explains it, evolution seems to have turned our nervous systems in ways that are optimal for these kinds of interpersonal and compassionate activities as we age. Furthermore, Penn State University psychologist David Almeida, that's A-L-M-E-I-D-A, has been studying the daily stressors of more than 3,000 adults for the past 30 years. He's shown that people in early adulthood may report stressors on at least 40 to 45% of days, but by the time they're in later midlife, that goes down to maybe 20 to 25% of days. Part of this is due to our ability to reframe and digest our normal day-to-day challenges. Okay, now let's move from science to real life. Here are my observations on how my EQ has grown with age so that I see my emotions as friends, not enemies. Number one, I feel more compassion for others. As I age, I've softened, and not just around my belly. I experience less ego and more soul, and I feel more deeply for others' lives, circumstances. Fortunately, I am able to direct some of that increased compassion toward myself as well. Number two, I am less emotionally reactive and more emotionally fluent. When I was younger, I had a kind of emotional vertigo. My emotions constantly made me feel imbalanced and uneasy. I didn't know how to dance with them. In fact, I often tried to outrun them. Today, I'm more emotionally fluent, and my emotions have moderated, partly because I've learned not to sweat the small stuff. Like the older participants in Levinson's study, I'm able to positively reappraise negative experiences, like getting stuck in traffic in an Uber. Interpretation, great chance to meditate. Simultaneously, my enhanced ability to recognize my patterns, habits, and tendencies allows me to observe myself more effectively. Number three, I don't take things so personally. Don Miguel Ruiz, and that's R-U-I-Z, the author of The Four Agreements, says, "There's a huge amount of freedom that comes to you when you take nothing personally." This skill is particularly valuable in our polarized cancel culture era. Number four, I have a better understanding of how to create my ideal habitats. Social scientists call this environmental mastery, the ability to determine which environments one will flourish in, and the capacity to adjust and adapt to changes in those habitats. This also speaks to why, in the workplace, older people on a team have been found to create more psychological safety on teams, because their environmental mastery, combined with their compassion, helps them create the proper conditions for teams to flourish. Number five, I value relationships more. It's been said that the two questions people ask on their deathbed are, "Did I love well?" and "Was I well loved?" The longitudinal Harvard study on adult development and research on the world's blue zones conclusively show that the relationships we cultivate in our lives can actually increase our lifespan. The ultimate middle-aged skill is knowing what you want from life. We spend so much of our first half of adulthood taste-testing life based upon conventional wisdom, social pressure, and family obligation. No wonder we make so many ill-guided decisions about love, work, family, and friends up through our 40s. While our life circumstances don't necessarily get easier as we age, our responses to them drastically improve. We are less reactive and more self-aware, and our capacity for empathy soars. Who wouldn't find this era of life an improvement over our earlier decades? Parts of this article were edited due to time, and this article was written by Chip Conley. So we're heading over into food with a possible recipe you might want to try. These buckwheat pancakes with compote and sweet cream will elevate your breakfast. Try this recipe from the cookbook Joyful by Radhi Devlukia Shetty. My older sister, whom I lovingly call Dee Dee, is the baker in our family. She makes the most delicious sweet treats and goodies, and one thing she has perfected over the years is making moist, fluffy pancakes. So when I think about the perfect breakfast, I often dream about a piping hot stack of her pancakes. I decided to take a shot at making my own version using buckwheat, a flour I absolutely love. It has an earthy, nutty flavor. It's considered a superfood because it's packed with protein and essential amino acids, and it's grain-free and gluten-free, so it feels lighter on your stomach. These pancakes aren't overly sweet, so you can load them up with all the delicious toppings, like fresh compote and sweet cream, maybe a drizzle of almond butter and maple syrup, or perhaps a sprinkle of toasted nuts. So this recipe makes about 12 pancakes, and it takes about 35 minutes to make. The ingredients. First is the compote, 1 cup of roughly chopped fresh seasonal fruit, such as peaches, cherries, strawberries, or blackberries, 1 teaspoon of coconut sugar, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, that's optional, and 1/4 teaspoon of ground ginger, also optional. For the pancakes, 1 cup of plain unsweetened vegan milk, 1/4 cup of unsweetened applesauce, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar, 1 tablespoon of extra virgin coconut oil melted, plus more for the pan, 1 tablespoon of maple syrup, plus more for serving, 1 cup of light buckwheat flour, 1/2 cup of almond, oat flour, or all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, and 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda. Then for serving, here are some options: almond or pistachio butter, maple syrup, toasted nuts, or mixed fruit for serving. So they're all optionals you can add on. So here are the directions. First, make the compote. In a small pot, stir together the fruit, sugar, cinnamon, if using, and ginger, if using, and bring the mixture to a boil over medium heat. Reduce the heat to a simmer and cook, stirring occasionally until the fruit is completely cooked and jammy. 3 minutes if you like a looser consistency, or 5 minutes if you prefer it thicker. Remove the pan from the heat and set aside. Now to make the pancakes. In a medium bowl, whisk together the milk, applesauce, vanilla, vinegar, coconut oil, and maple syrup. In a large bowl, sift together the buckwheat flour, almond flour, baking powder, and baking soda. Add the milk mixture to the flour mixture and whisk just until smooth, taking care not to overmix or your pancakes won't be as fluffy. In a large non-stick skillet, heat about 1 teaspoon of coconut oil over medium heat. Add 1/4 cup of batter per pancake and cook until the top side of each pancake starts to bubble, 3 to 4 minutes. Flip and cook until the second side is matte, M-A-T-T-E, and another minute or so. Transfer the pancakes to a plate and repeat with the remaining batter. To serve, top the pancakes with the compote. If desired, you can top the pancakes with almond butter, maple syrup, toasted nuts, and/or fresh fruit for any combination of them. Note, I recommend using light buckwheat flour for this recipe instead of dark. Light buckwheat flour will make the pancakes fluffier and less sticky. You could do a variation and do buckwheat waffles. You can also use this batter in a waffle maker for perfect crispy fluffy waffles. You'll get about 5. Simply preheat the waffle iron, spray your brush with oil, and add about 3/4 cup to the iron, making sure it spreads evenly. Cook until the waffle is golden brown. The steam stops rising from the waffle iron, and the waffle lifts easily from the griddle. Serve with the sweet cashew cream and compote. In wellness, Self-Help in Microdoses, 3 books for life's smaller stressors, because mini fixes can make a big difference. When we talk about mental health, we often discuss the big stuff. Depression, burnout, trauma with a capital T. But sometimes it's helpful to zoom in on the smaller aspects of your emotional and psychological life that you don't even realize are impacting you day to day. This mini library offers just that. The first one is Tiny Traumas by Dr. Meg Arroll, A-R-R-O-L-L. In life, says Meg Arroll, PhD, there are 2 types of traumas. Big T traumas, such as a car accident or the death of a loved one, and the little T traumas, which may not seem as momentous, but can leave just as deep an imprint. We're often taught to disregard the tiny T traumas that gradually and insidiously leave a hollow space inside us, such as tricky family dynamics, toxic positivity, microaggressions, and gaslighting. Arroll explains how to identify lowercase T traumas in your life and offers practical tools to transcend them with her AAA method, awareness, acceptance, and action. The tiny takeaway, little T traumas can make you feel disconnected and emotionally weighed down. Recognize them with self-compassion can lighten the load. And this book is able to purchase from Amazon for $21. The next book is Your Pocket Therapist by Dr. Annie Zimmerman. Psychotherapist and TikTok personality Annie Zimmerman, PhD, is another expert on tiny T traumas. She believes in getting to the root of your issues, however insignificant they may seem. After all, we can't change what we don't even know is broken. Through personal testimonials from clients, Zimmerman explores the ramifications of little traumas as well as those of adverse childhood experiences and offers easily digestible tools for healing past wounds, fostering meaningful connections with others, and taking charge of your mental wellness. The pocket-sized point, learn to practice self-awareness in a non-judgmental way. Reflect on your childhood, notice what you're drawn to or what you avoid, and connect with your body through meditation. These exercises can all ease suffering. And you can also get this book on Amazon for $25. The next one is Little Treatments, Big Effects by Jessica Schleider, S-C-H-L-E-I-D-E-R. If you've struggled to find good mental health care, join the club. Long wait lists, financial constraints, time limitations, lack of support, all these problems keep us from getting quality treatment, and changing them requires big policy-level solutions. What do we do in the meantime? Enter Jessica Schleider, PhD, whose method involves single-session interventions, SSIs. In other words, structured approaches to therapy that intentionally involve just one visit or encounter with a clinic, provider, or program. This, she claims, makes mental health treatment more available, empowering non-stigmatism and affordable to more people. Her book is rife with collected testimony and research to support how SSIs radically change the way we approach mental health care. After reading this, you'll all want an intervention too. The compact conclusion, the mental health care system needs an overhaul. But for the time being, create meaningful moments for yourself. Write down an actionable plan to connect with others, fulfill a personal goal, or indulge in a favorite hobby. This book is $22 at Amazon. This article is in Relationships. The New Rules of Ghosting: An Etiquette Guide to Going Poof, Plus How to Soft Ghost. The question popped into my head more quickly than any intrusive thought ever has. After yet another mediocre two-date series came to an end with that shudder-inducing text, "It's been fun getting to know you, but I don't think I'm interested," I thought, would it feel better to just be ghosted? Ghosting is extremely common, of course. The dating site Plenty of Fish recently surveyed a pool of U.S.-based users and found, alarmingly but not surprisingly, that 78% have been ghosted and 35% have admitted to ghosting. Yes, being ghosted comes with a haunted house of pain points, the lack of closure, that nagging urge to send just one more follow-up text because maybe they didn't see the others, or maybe they dropped their phone into a lake or slipped into a brief coma. But it almost feels worse to receive a text that feels like a breakup, especially when you barely connected in the first place. I'd much rather be ghosted after one or two dates than told why I'm not a viable candidate for someone, says Sarah Solomon, author of the Handbook for Reluctant Adults. Guac is extra, but so am I. I went on the most painful date ever. 15 minutes after leaving, he texts me, "Hey, I don't think we're right for each other, but it was great meeting you. You'll find someone." It was like he could tell I didn't like him and wanted to get it out of the way and say he was the one who got rid of me. On the other hand, sending that thanks but no thanks text can be a drag too. If you're anything like me, you'll spend longer than you care to admit crafting the perfect way to let them down easy, when in reality, there's really no way to make a rejection feel good. When the Thriving Center of Psychology surveyed millennials and Gen Zers about ghosting, 56% said that they ghost in order to avoid confrontation, and 86% said they felt relieved after ghosting. Yikes! But also, some, while 69% reported feeling ghosting guilt, 3 out of 4 participants also said it can be appropriate sometimes. This stew of nebulous feelings doesn't apply just to dating. What if you have to break up with your doctor, dog walker, real estate agent, or babysitter? What about the friend you make a quarterly plan with, knowing one of you will cancel the day of? I had to wonder, is it immoral if I ghost the therapist who forgot my name during a session? According to Elaine Swan, an etiquette expert and author of Let Crazy Be Crazy, ghosting is underrated. A lot of people think it's inappropriate and that you must always have a reason or a conversation, she says. I don't agree with that perspective. I think people should embrace it more so that they can avoid all the arguments and heartbreak and excuses. For total clarity, we asked Swan and others for a breakdown of do's and don'ts. Do not ghost. When you've developed a significant connection with somebody or you've been on multiple dates, it's best to be honest and open and have a direct conversation, says Eva Gallagher, resident dating expert for Plenty of Fish. If someone reaches out to you asking where you've been or whether they'll see you again, you should do the right thing and respond. Guilt is one of the most powerful forces in the universe, Solomon says. It behooves you to not feel like an idiot for ghosting someone who was perfectly nice to you. If you've gone out with someone with whom you share mutual friends, ghosting is a no-go, because you really don't want to end up with your foot in your mouth at some birthday party down the line. Unfortunately, you can't ghost the parents of your kids' friends, even if the kids don't stay close. Eventually, you're going to run into them at the grocery store or school recital, and it's going to be awkward. Save yourself the future embarrassment. And you definitely shouldn't ghost anyone you've had a job interview with. We know, potential employers ghost all the time, but you're better off being the bigger person and keeping future options open by saying whether you've accepted a different offer. The one doctor you kind of can't ghost is your therapist. they're caring for your safety and well-being. So going completely silent isn't the morally cool thing to do. Just let them know you're moving on. Ghosting your book club, religious group, or any organization you belong to is also a no-go. If you're going to maintain a friendship with anyone in that crew, you really should issue a formal goodbye. Go ahead and ghost. For doctors, plumbers, massage therapists, real estate agents, and other service providers with whom you had an average relationship, ghosting is totally fine, Swan says. This is especially true if your last experience together wasn't great, like when your latest haircut made you look like your mother, or that scary personal trainer had you doing burpees. A newish babysitter who let your kid go wild on Halloween candy can also be ghosted, according to Swan. You'll likely end up in an argument if you explain why you're upset, she says. The person will get defensive, and you'll want to defend yourself, and it's a waste of time. When you feel unsafe or uncomfortable on a date, ghosting is the way to go. If you get that weird feeling, uneasy, this person's creeping me out, or you wouldn't feel safe if you rejected this person, you can certainly give them the slip, says Amy Leadingham, a certified relationship coach. Otherwise, use the 3-date rule of thumb. If you went on a couple of times with little to no connection, ghosting is acceptable. Mutual ghosting is A-OK. If neither of you contact one another, you're golden. There wasn't a spark, and there doesn't need to be any awkward conversation, Solomon says. This applies to friendships, too, so seriously, don't feel bad about that college bond that's petered out. You really only connected over your mutual love for $3 Long Island iced teas anyway. The gray area. That friend who texts, I miss you, I hope you're well, every 6 months. Ask yourself whether it's truly worth continuing that have drinks once a year, if that relationship. If the answer is no, it's probably fine to let that text chain fizzle out. It's okay to step away. There's no love lost, Swan says. You can also opt for a soft ghost, answering happy birthday and holiday greetings, liking the occasional gram if the time and energy don't bother you, and a quick thumbs up or heart will suffice. Then there's that once close friend who's completely stopped answering your annual birthday text. Swan says to ask yourself why you continue to reach out year after year. If you want a reciprocal relationship with this person, it's time for a confrontation. If not, ghost them back and move on to friends who care about you. Going gray after seeing the same colorist for a decade? You could ghost, but they'd be happy hearing a goodbye from you and knowing you haven't ditched them for another colorist. It's always polite to acknowledge the end of a positive relationship with any service provider. When in doubt, use the golden rule. Treat others the way you want to be treated, and if you wouldn't be mad being ghosted by them, do yourself a favor and ghost away. Parts of this article were edited due to time, and the article was written by Cassie Hurwitz. Over in Culture and News, today hosts Hoda Kotb and Jenna Bush Hager spark massive debate over eating snow. It all stems from Reese Witherspoon's video about snow salt chocochinos. Reese Witherspoon set the internet ablaze after revealing her snow salt chocochino, so much so that even Hoda Kotb and Jenna Bush Hager had something to say about it. During a January 22nd taping of the Today Show, Kotb and Bush Hager spent some time talking about Reese going viral on TikTok for creating her snow salt chocochino. In the clip, she showed how she scooped some snow off her car into a mug, poured chocolate and caramel syrup onto it, and then added cold brew. As social media blew up with health concerns over Witherspoon eating freshly fallen snow, Kotb and Bush Hager were all in agreement with the actress making the sweet treat. This is a whole thing, and we don't understand it, but it's a thing, Kotb began. So then the internet was mad because don't eat snow? Because it must fall through pollution? I don't know. We've been eating snow, and we would eat it like 3 days later, too, Bush Hager added. We tried to make sure it wasn't yellow, but if it was white, we were going for it. This wasn't all Kotb and Bush Hager had to say about Witherspoon's latest concoction. As the two further explained, they make something very similar, and there's a family connection to it, too. Here's what we did, And you, I think, introduced me to this concept, Codeby continued. When the snow falls, we get cups. We fill it up. We take half and half, or heavy cream. We add some sugar or sweetener, mix it up, and it's called snow ice cream. Yes, that was what my mom did when it snowed once a year in Texas, Bushhager concluded. That was her recipe that we passed down. Upon hearing Codeby and Bushhager were all for Witherspoon making more snow salt chocochinos, fans went to social media to voice their agreement on the concept. I still eat freshly fallen snow. I have done it since I was a kid, one person wrote on Instagram. Snow cream is the best. Made it for my kids and the whole neighborhood every year, another agreed. I'm with Reese. Yum. And a heart symbol, a different follower added. Nevertheless, there was still some concern about eating freshly fallen snow off the ground. Snow is filthy. Please don't do this, one person begged. Disgusting, all the chemicals and exhaust fumes on your car, another replied. Nope, a different fan simply remarked. For the record, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say to avoid eating snow if you're stranded somewhere because it can lower your body temperature, but doesn't mention any other snow eating guidelines. That being said, if you're going to eat it, clean snow is the only option, and only in moderation. Another article in Culture and News. Celebrity Jeopardy fans are furious after a massive spoiler from ABC. Abbott Elementary star Lisa Ann Walter won Season 2, but fans think a Jimmy Kimmel Live promo leaked it. Celebrity Jeopardy Season 2 is officially a wrap, and let's all congratulate Abbott Elementary star Lisa Ann Walter for being declared the winner. After 4 months of watching some of the biggest names battle it out to solve obscure trivia questions on TV, fans of the hit quiz show tuned in to see Walter, TV personality Mo Rocca, and sports analyst Katie Nolan compete to win the victor and win the $1 million prize for charity. In the end, it all came down to Walter, who claimed the top prize and donated her winnings to the Entertainment Community Fund. But, in a surprise twist of events, ABC, the network Celebrity Jeopardy airs on, may have given folks a clue as to who would be the winner of Season 2, way as the episode was airing on television. How? Apparently, a banner promo for the upcoming episode of Jimmy Kimmel Live appeared on screen showing Walter would be a guest later that night. ABC totally spoiled the Celebrity at Jeopardy final with this ad for Jimmy Kimmel's show. X, formerly known as Twitter user, at WorthyG, and that's WORTHIGE, wrote on January 23rd, as if she just happened to be on tonight and not win. This user wasn't the only one who noticed the unexpected slip-up. Other viewers also took to social media to share their opinions about spoiler. At Celeb Jeopardy, not cool. Right at the beginning of the final, there was a commercial scroll saying that champion Lisa Ann would be on Kimmel. Not cool, one person commented on X. At ABC Network, thanks for the spoiler on the Celebrity Jeopardy winner with the in-show pop-up ad for Jimmy Kimmel's guest Lisa Ann Walter 20 seconds into the tournament final, another noted. Since Lisa Ann Walter is on at Jimmy Kimmel tonight, it is safe to say she won. I don't want to assume or spoil anything. Hashtag Celebrity Jeopardy, a different follower added. While ABC never commented about the unforeseen mishap, Walter did speak during her late-night appearance why winning Celebrity Jeopardy meant so much to her. Well, my mom was the Jeopardy queen, she told host Jimmy Kimmel. My mom passed 2 years ago. She was the one that would sit in the car, talk radio was on. She'd get to a subject and go, you know, back in the 1600s, and then the radio would go off and we'd get an hour lecture about everything. That's where I picked up a lot of this stuff. It was really just luck and my mom. Another article in Culture and News. Today, star Chanel Jones accidentally offends Al Roker after making a surprising confession. Turns out even NBC News reporters don't always pay attention to the weather. During a January 19th taping of the Today Show, Al Roker, Chanel Jones, Craig Melvin, and contributor Steve Kornacki were all on hand to break down the football team matchup headings into the NFL playoffs. But before Kornacki went over the stats, Jones caused Roker to go into a tizzy by revealing she actually doesn't listen while Roker delivers the weather report. "You're surprised it's snowing out," Roker said to Jones as she looked out the window. "Do you listen to anything I say?" "You know, I always tell people news people are the worst," Jones replied, "because when the weather folks talk, that's when we check our phones." Upon hearing Jones's shocking confession, Roker couldn't help but be offended. "Oh, that hurts. I'm right here," Roker told her while looking surprised at her admission. Luckily, he quickly got placated by Jones, who explained that while she may not watch as he goes through the temperatures of the day, she understands the effort he puts into it. "I know, and I appreciate you so much," she responded back. Although Roker and Jones were jokingly at odds with one another, we know they have an unbelievable friendship. As Roker celebrated 45 years of working at NBC, Jones, Melvin, and fellow Today Show employees created a 45-second video detailing how much they've enjoyed seeing Roker blossom from weatherman to overall on-air TV personality. Another culture and news article, Sofia Vergara reveals she and Joe Manganiello split because he wanted to have children. Sofia Vergara and Joe Manganiello split amicably last summer after 7 years of marriage. "We were all shocked by the sudden news, and now the Griselda star has disclosed why the split was in her and her ex-husband's best interest. My marriage broke up because my husband was younger. He wanted to have kids, and I didn't want to be an old mom," Vergara said in an interview with Spanish newspaper El País. And that's pronounced as spelled E-L-P-A-I with an accent mark over the I-S. "I feel it's not fair to the baby. I respect whoever does it, but that's not for me anymore." Vergara is a mom to one adult son, Manolo, whom she shares with ex-husband Joe Gonzalez. "I had a son at 19 who is now 32, and I'm ready to be a grandmother, not a mother. So if love comes along, he has to come with his own children," she said. "I'm almost in menopause. It's the natural way of things," she added. "When my son becomes a dad, let him bring the baby to me for a while, and then I'll give it back to him and go on with my life. That's what I have to do." Manganiello filed for divorce from Vergara in late July, 2 days after the two released a joint statement announcing their separation. "As two people that love and care for one another very much, we politely ask for respect for our privacy at this time, as we navigate this new phase of our lives," she wrote. Since then, Vergara has been dating. During a recent appearance on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, she admitted she wants to spend more time in New York City to, among other things, find a man. "I love it. Who doesn't love New York City? The people, it's the energy," she said. "I think that you have more options with men also." Vergara, who lives in Los Angeles most of the time, added, "I'm single now, so in New York there are more people. There's not only actors or writers or directors. I think there's a bigger pool. I'm going to spend more time in New York." This next article is also in Culture and News. New study finds potential cause of long COVID symptoms, experts explain. Researchers say this could lead to diagnostic tests and treatments. Long COVID has mystified the medical community for years, making it a tough condition to diagnose, let alone treat. However, a growing body of research has found more information on what may be behind long COVID, with the hope of eventually finding an effective treatment. Now, a new study has made an interesting discovery on what may cause long COVID symptoms, a change in the immune system that may be detected via a blood test. That's the major takeaway from a new study published in the journal Science. For the study, researchers followed 113 patients with COVID-19 and 39 healthy patients as controls. After 6 months, 40 of the COVID-19 patients developed symptoms of long COVID. The researchers analyzed blood samples from those patients and found that they had a group of proteins that showed that a portion of the immune system called the complement system was ramped up well after the patients recovered from COVID-19. The study analyzed 6,596 proteins across 268 blood samples, which were collected during patients' acute phase, and again 6 months later. Researchers found several differences in the blood of people with long COVID compared to the healthy patients, including an imbalance in proteins involved in blood clotting and inflammation. Researchers also found that those with long COVID had a group of proteins that showed that a portion of the immune system, called the complement system, was ramped up well after the patients recovered from COVID-19. The researchers concluded that the findings provide a basis for new diagnostic solutions for long COVID. Here's what you need to know about the findings. What is the complement immune system? As the name implies, the complement immune system is part of the immune system. It's our baseline and first line of immunity, says Thomas Russo, MD, professor and chief of infectious disease at the University of Buffalo, New York. Complement is an arm of the immune system that complements the action of the other arms, explains infectious disease expert Amesh A. Adalja, A-D-A-L-J-A, MD, senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Activities that it performs range from literally attacking the cell membranes of a pathogen to summoning the cells of other immune systems to the site of infection. Among other things, your complement immune system cleans up damaged cells, helps your body heal after an injury or infection, and destroys microscopic organisms like bacteria that can make you sick, the Cleveland Clinic notes. The proteins that make up your complement system are created in your liver and move to your tissues and blood, the organization says. The complement system also activates inflammation in your body to prevent infection, Dr. Russo says. If it's dysregulated or constantly activated, that inflammation can continue, he says. Here's the problem with that. If your complement immune system is activated for too long, it puts you at risk for autoimmune or inflammatory conditions like allergic asthma, anemia, leukemia, kidney disease, and rheumatoid arthritis, the Cleveland Clinic notes, and apparently long COVID. In the case of long COVID, this complement immune system activation may be linked to microclots, tiny blood clots that can form. These can block the blood vessels and lead to damage, Dr. Russo says, that can cause premature cardiac events, dementia, respiratory failure, and renal failure. Microclots have also been linked to the extreme fatigue some people with long COVID struggle with. What do these findings mean? Doctors say that the study's findings are a big deal. This is really important study, Dr. Russo says. We've been struggling both to diagnose long COVID and to treat it. This study lends some support. How? It could help provide a base for future diagnostic tests and even treatments, Dr. Adalja says. Essentially, once scientists know what causes a condition like long COVID, they can go to work finding a way to heal people who have it. Dr. Adalja also points out there are existing drugs that target the complement system. But while Dr. Russo says the findings are very likely to be helpful to many long COVID patients, he also says the complement system may not be involved in all long COVID patients. I have no doubt that with long COVID, one size does not fit all, he says. But this has the potential to perhaps be part of a diagnostic test for at least some patients. Dr. Russo says that it's crucial that researchers continue to explore what's behind long COVID. Millions of people across the planet have long COVID or will develop it, he says. It's going to be the next major phase of this pandemic. If we don't learn to diagnose and manage this, we're going to have many people with complications that impact their lives for the long term. Again, in Culture and News, Jamie Lee Curtis opens up about finding self-acceptance and the beauty of aging. The star gets candid while promoting her new book, Just One More Sleep. Turning 65 was a real watershed moment for Jamie Lee Curtis. The milestone is helping her fully lean into self-acceptance. In November, for example, she shared a confident gym selfie to celebrate her age, and now she's opening up about how she's embracing her whole self inside and out. The journey to self-love is a long and winding one for anyone, and for Curtis, it included battling an opiate addiction. After a plastic surgery for hereditary puffy eyes in 1989, she was prescribed strong pain medication and became reliant on it. Now, decades later, she told Today how her sobriety journey shaped the personal contentment she has now. For her, it's all about stepping out from behind her mistakes. "I'm trying to own it. Isn't that what life is supposed to be? We grow up, we learn, we do all these things. Now we have to own it," she said. "We have to own who we are, be who we are, and be in full acceptance of who we are and what we're not. And I think that's the beauty of me right now, owning it." With that has come a step away from prioritizing people-pleasing, she added. "I'm sober for a long time, almost 25 years," she said. "And the best thing I learned last year in recovery was people aren't pleased when you stop people-pleasing. It was as if the greatest sage arrived on me." Now, although she is thoughtful about her communication, and let's be honest, she's the ultimate hype woman, she doesn't overthink it to her disadvantage. "I say what I mean, and I mean what I say, and I try not to say it mean," she said. Curtis joined Today to promote her new children's book, Just One More Sleep. This comes shortly after the release of her graphic novel, Mother Nature. Clearly, the actress and author has been busy behind the scenes, and that's because she has no time to waste. "I joke about it, but I'm going to die way sooner than later, and therefore I have lots to do," she said at San Diego Comic-Con in July. "There is one of the things that I needed to do, and I'm excited about her. We may well make this into a movie at some point. That would be fun," she said of Mother Nature. "Maybe I'll direct it. Maybe I'll co-write it. Maybe I'll be in it. And maybe I'll do all of it. Because when you're fully self-acceptant, you have nothing to lose." Adding this tidbit to our list of JLC wisdom to live by stat. Parts of this article were edited due to time. And another in culture and news, Kate Middleton is in the hospital, recovering from planned abdominal surgery. The Princess of Wales will not be doing any new engagements until after Easter, the palace revealed in a statement. Kate Middleton is in the hospital and recovering from planned abdominal surgery, Kensington Palace announced today on Instagram. The Princess of Wales will be absent from engagements until after Easter, which is March 31st this year. The palace said in a statement that the procedure, which was conducted yesterday, went well. The surgery was successful, and it is expected that she will remain in hospital for 10 to 14 days before returning home to continue her recovery. Based on the current medical advice, she is unlikely to return to public duties until after Easter. The Princess of Wales appreciates the interest this statement will generate. She hopes that the public will understand her desire to maintain as much normality for her children as possible, and her wish that her personal medical information remains private. Kensington Palace will, therefore, only provide updates on Her Royal Highness's progress when there is significant new information to share. The Prince of Wales wishes to apologize to all those concerned for the fact that she has to postpone her upcoming engagements. She looks forward to reinstating as many as possible as soon as possible. This article was published January 17th, so the dates in the article would relate to that date. We have another recipe for you in the food section. Make this polenta bake with creamy mushrooms and chili spiked tomato sauce tonight. Whip up this recipe from the cookbook Joyful by Radhi Devlokia Shetty. It doesn't get homier or more comforting than a casserole, especially when it's topped with soft, buttery polenta that's gone crispy around the edges and smothered in a chili-infused tomato sauce. You just cut yourself a slab and dig right in. Sure, it's not the prettiest dish, but we love it anyway. It has 4 to 6 servings, and it takes about 50 minutes to make. The ingredients: the polenta, 1 cup of plain unsweetened vegan milk such as almond, 1/2 cup of medium ground cornmeal, 1 tablespoon of nutritional yeast, 1/2 teaspoon of Italian seasoning, 1/2 tablespoon of dried parsley, 3/4 teaspoon of sea salt, 1/4 teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper, and 2 tablespoons of vegan Parmesan cheese, which is optional. The sauce has 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 2 cups of cherry tomatoes halved, or 1 and 14.5 ounces of canned crushed tomatoes, 1 tablespoon of chili oil, 1 bay leaf, 1/2 teaspoon of sea salt, 1/2 teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper. And now for the filling. It's 1 tablespoon of unsalted vegan butter, 8 ounces of white mushrooms sliced, 2 bay leaves, 1 teaspoon of fresh thyme leaves or 1/4 teaspoon of dried, 1/2 teaspoon of sea salt, 1/8 teaspoon asafoetida, 4 cups of packed fresh spinach leaves, about 32 ounces, 1/3 cup of chopped fresh parsley leaves, 1 tablespoon of nutritional yeast, 4 ounces of vegan cream cheese, and 1 cup of shredded vegan mozzarella. And here are the directions. Make the polenta. In a medium saucepan, combine the milk and 1 1/2 cups of water. Bring to a boil over high heat and slowly stir in the cornmeal. Stir in the nutritional yeast, Italian seasoning, dried parsley, salt, and pepper. Reduce the heat to medium-low and cook, stirring occasionally until the polenta is smooth and soft, 20 to 25 minutes. If the polenta is thickening too quickly, add a splash of water to the pan. Stir in the Parmesan if using and remove the pot from the heat, cover to keep warm. Make the sauce. In a large skillet, heat the olive oil over medium-low heat. Add the tomatoes, chili oil, bay leaf, salt, and pepper, and cook, stirring occasionally, until the tomatoes begin to take on some color, 10 to 12 minutes. Stir and mash the tomatoes a bit with your spoon to create a chunky sauce consistency. Remove the pan from the heat and set aside. Preheat the broiler to 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Make the filling. In a large skillet, melt the butter over low heat. Add the sliced mushrooms, bay leaves, thyme, salt, and asafoetida. Cook, stirring occasionally until the mushrooms are soft and the herbs release their fragrance, about 5 minutes. Add the spinach, parsley, and nutritional yeast, and cook until the spinach wilts, about 5 minutes. Discard the bay leaves. Stir in the cream cheese and 1/2 cup of the mozzarella. Cook, stirring until creamy and combined, 1 to 2 minutes. Transfer the filling mixture to a 7 by 11 inch heat-proof baking dish. Spread the polenta over the filling in an even layer. Top the polenta with generous dollops of the sauce and the remaining mozzarella. Broil until the cheese melts and the sauce is bubbling, 5 to 6 minutes. Serve warm, store leftovers in a sealed container in the refrigerator for up to 3 days. Back in culture and news, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry made a surprise appearance at Bob Marley One Love movie premiere. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex were joined by the film's stars and other Jamaican VIPs. In a surprising turn of events, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle appeared in Kingston, Jamaica for the premiere of the upcoming Bob Marley biopic Bob Marley One Love. The biopic stars Kingsley Ben-Adir as Bob Marley and Lashana Lynch as his wife Rita. The film had a premiere in Jamaica ahead of the movie's theatrical debut on February 14th. Their appearance was first reported by the Jamaica Gleaner, and it marks Markle's first public appearance of 2024 and Prince Harry's second, He was at an award show for Legends of Aviation this past weekend in Beverly Hills. For the occasion, Markle wore an elegant black maxi dress with statement earrings, and Prince Harry kept it casual in a suit without a tie. The premiere was held at the Carib 5 Theater and Crossroads in St. Andrew, Jamaica, and they were joined by the film's stars and Jamaican VIPs like Prime Minister Andrew Holness and Bob Marley's son Ziggy Marley. This is their second trip to Jamaica as a couple. They first traveled there in 2017 to attend Prince Harry's friend Tom Inskip's wedding. During that visit, they stayed at Round Hill, the iconic Montego Bay resort. They've both traveled there before. In fact, Markle's first wedding to Trevor Engelson took place in Jamaica at Jamaica Inn in Ocho Rios. Meanwhile, Prince Harry has visited the country as part of a Diamond Jubilee Royal Tour he undertook in 2012. When Markle still wrote her blog, The Tig, she wrote about her love for the country, saying of a trip to Negril, Jamaica, "Do you ever have that vacation that is so good that you're conflicted between wanting to share it with the world versus tucking the memory snugly under your pillow so that no one ever finds out about this specific sliver of paradise? So that it just remains yours, special and private, just for you? I'm opting to go with the former on this, begrudgingly, I might add." She continued, "After only a few days in Negril, I felt instantly renewed. Morning yoga in front of the cool Caribbean sea, afternoon cliff jumping into the water, and dinners where my best accessory was always the jerk sauce covering my face after a perfect meal." So here's a gift idea for someone in your life. It's a Colson concrete tabletop indoor fireplace. We won't lie, this gift may benefit you both during a romantic at-home date night. The mini fireplace is also ideal for marshmallow roasting. The flame is generated by isopropyl or rubbing alcohol and lasts 40 to 50 minutes. It's also perfect for ambiance to set the mood. It's $32 at Amazon. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Again, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. So long until next time.